Well, actually, we're not going to do teaching machine learning in 50 minutes. If you don't have some idea what it's going to, what you could do with machine learning and deep learning, I'm not going to teach you how to do it, but I'll show you how to use existing machine learning libraries, algorithms, and pre-trained models in a completely 100% Apache open source way to move them into production, use them on your own, you know, be able to do things with them. You know, no one thinks this is a good idea but me. They want to use some kind of commercial piece or something that's outside of the ASF, but I think you could do everything inside Apache projects, from the capture of images to the storage in any data store you want, whether it's cloud-based, Hadoop, a regular file, anything, and run a lot of processing along the way, whether you're doing text, whether you're doing images, tabular data, anything in between. Who am I? Well, there's some who call me Tim. I like bacon. New Jersey based. I was going to try to do the talk in French, and I thought French in a New Jersey accent may not be decipherable. So I wrote software to translate my talk into French, and that's going on while we speak. I'm pushing it to a Slack channel. I'll show you that at the end. I did that last night because someone thought that was a good idea. So we're doing that. I work at Hortonworks, which is nice because we're all Apache projects, which I love. I was at Pivotal. We did a lot of open source as well. If anyone has any more stickers, there's a spot somewhere on there. I'm putting some on the bottom now because someone said you didn't put them on the bottom. I'm like, yeah, now I could do that. I have a couple of my own stickers, which I'm giving out. It's this one. It's a little hard to read. It's a picture of my cat. He's wearing a tie, which you saw in the previous slide. He likes to wear ties. He just sits next to me when I'm coding, which is pretty awesome. The other one doesn't like wearing a tie as much. What are you going to do? Okay, so we're going to use a lot of different Apache projects. I didn't know which Apache shirt to wear. Originally, I was going to wear the NiFi one, but then my friends at the MXNet team gave me an MXNet shirt, so I'm wearing that one, but underneath is the NiFi shirt. So I was going to swap in the middle, but I have the mic attached to that, and I don't know if that's a good idea. So what's this talk for? I did this in Berlin. I cleaned it up because that was a more corporate audience, and I think you guys are a little less corporate. So this is for data engineers and also anyone who does any, even a little bit of programming, any Python, Java. These are things you can do. AI, deep learning is not something that's really complex. You don't need to buy an expensive GPU card. You don't need to buy a special cloud. I'm running flows right on my laptop here. It's running all open source. I've got Apache NiFi and Apache MXNet to run this. They're running locally. It's pretty easy to install. What you're seeing pop up is I have it running on my laptop now, and it's popping up Python as it's calling MXNet. So you're going to see a lot of half pictures of my face being analyzed, which will come out very special because sometimes it thinks my head is, I don't know, a paddle or very weird things because I haven't trained these libraries to be extremely accurate. They really have a small thing set that they're pre-trained on. And you could take these pre-trained classes and you could run them pretty simply on your own with your own pictures. So say you have cars you're looking at. If you train it with pictures of these cars, it can identify the individual cars for you. So it could be as accurate as you're willing to train it. And the training's not hard. The documentation is all on the MXNet site. You could go there, put your own set of images in and the descriptions, and have it matched. You could do it with people's faces, items. I'm doing it for people who have brown trucks who have objects in there. And it could tell you, oh, this is the package. And then also do the next part is look at what the tracking information on, say, those brown boxes are, which is pretty cool. So this is for Anyone can do this. My cat can. He is an expert in ETL, eating, ties, and laziness, because he just kind of sits next to me and smiles for a picture. That's about it. Eventually, some people think AI is going to be able to do this talk for you, and we're pretty close now. This is not that good a talk. Let's go into demo. I got more slides, and all the slides will be posted, and they all have links to how to do things even deeper. I have links to articles, GitHub repos, everything you need to do, but I thought it makes more sense to show you it in the real world and not just slideware. Because this is Apache software, it works. I don't have to worry about it crashing, though we're live. Though I can worry about the network crashing. Yeah. That's probably the biggest concern anywhere. Right here is, remember I said I was translating that? Well, actually, Python's translating that. But it's posting my slides one line at a time into Slack. And I wrote this last night because someone, I was joking I was going to translate it, and they said, okay, do it. And I'm like, oh, you were serious. Fortunately, I had an Apache NiFi flow to do something similar already. I'm using a combination of NiFi, Apache Tika, Apache OpenNLP to grab a PDF of my talk, pull out all the text, and then once I have the text, I'm splitting it up into individual lines, and then I'm sending it to a Python library called TextBlob that uses Google Translate to translate the lines. But because they're doing it, I don't need their ID, and then I just push it to Slack. If you look at these boxes, I probably should explain how NiFi works. NiFi has been an Apache project for a while. There's a lot of committers, very good community here. What I like about this is it pretty much can do anything within reason, and sometimes things without reason. I like to do some things that I've been told by Joe Witt, the PMC, that people shouldn't do it. That's why I put that warning in the beginning. Sometimes I'll do things in NiFi that are maybe stretching the boundaries. I use it for my live DJing. I use it to use it for live audio. Things are pushing the boundaries there. It's really designed for doing simple event processing. And what's nice is what you're looking at is the interface. This is not the object diagrams behind it. This is how NiFi works. And it's as simple as dragging and dropping boxes onto the screen. What's cool is each one of these boxes is a configurable bit of Java code that you can write yourself. And I've written a couple of my own because it's pretty straightforward. And you could do things like call other Apache projects, which I think has been extremely helpful because they've done a lot of that hard work for you. Why start from scratch? I'm using OpenNLP. OpenNLP for those. You know, you could do a lot of different things just stitching together these existing code. You could take any Java code you have already and drop it inside of one of these custom processors. What's nice about that is you get all the advantages of NiFi. Besides this nice UI that's distributed on a zero master cluster, I could have one node running on a laptop or I could have 10,000 running in a cloud. It doesn't really matter. It makes it very easy to manage that. And now that code has the ability to stream or to be, you know, driven by batch style. If I want to do a cron job for each step, I can do that. There's properties to set most of the things. There's a little bit of an expression language in there. Pretty straightforward. What's the next part that I like is if you notice here, I have something stopped. I can stop live flows. So I can do things in production. Again, things people don't recommend. I can stop, start things without losing data. If you look between each one of these little boxes is a configurable queue. By default, it holds 10,000 objects and a gig of data, which is usually enough for me. I mean, some people move that up. Obviously, if you're putting that between each step, you might want to have a lot of RAM on the machine. It's really when you're dealing with things you want to change in the fly, Like, I just decided, if you notice, this is kind of off to the side. I did this last night and decided to see if I could take this flow I had already, take the text I got from that PDF, send it to a Python script to translate it, then I push it to Slack. I'm pushing it to two different Slack channels, and this is as hard as it is to push to Slack. There's that webhook URL. If you've done anything with Slack integration, there's a screen. You go there, copy the URL, and you can communicate with them. You pick your channel, send some text to them, and it sends it over there. I'm sending the English version and the French version, because why not? I got two channels. It's pulling all the text out. That's kind of cool. Okay, so that part I like. The other part, which is cool, besides these steps, so I can add code on the fly, I could stop. The reason why that becomes important is, say you ran out of, I can't store anything in S3 anymore. I don't have any cloud budget anymore. Someone says, you got to stop. So I could pause it, not lose any data, and decide, you know, let me just put that somewhere else. I could just put that in a local file, put that in an FTP server, and I could just add that and not have to worry. You know, I can have anything go to anywhere. Like, I could just go, okay, now the output of that goes here as well. But now it's two outputs. Or I could take one that's already connected and move it. So I can process those files that are already there. And then I could just start and stop things any way I want. As you can see, these things are queued up. And I could examine the queue and see what's in there, decide to process it. Everything has a unique ID on it. We also have a lot of metadata kept for everything, all the attributes related to this data. It's pretty cool like that. Another thing that's useful, I think is very useful when we start talking about distributed deep learning, because now that I've got it on my laptop, what if I put this on everyone's laptop, everyone's phone, everyone's tablet, every little device, every Raspberry Pi? I do an IoT talk where I have five Raspberry Pis, all of them doing different sensors and doing MXNet on them and capturing images and sending them all back. All of those can be done at the same time. We support as many nodes as you want. And that's in the, just download it from NiFi. And from there, you could do whatever you need to do. What's cool is this data provenance comes into play when you're dealing with, how do I manage, there's 1,000 devices all over the world sending this data in. How do you know what step, if something failed or if something doesn't look right, how do you know what happened? You know, trying to trace that in a distributed system is extremely complex. Especially a deal, you had a cloud, you had a gateway, someone's in a moving truck. Where did that data go? What step, you know, how do I manage that? Well, what's really cool with Apache NiFi is we manage it at every step of the way. So if you look here at each one of these boxes, we have something called data provenance that has every step of everything we processed with a lot of details about it. And this metadata, we cache it locally, but all of this can be sent somewhere. And you could send it to Grafana, any of those time series or logging type systems, or you could send it to NiFi and NiFi could process it. And I could put it into Hive tables or put it in a relational database, wherever you like to store data. We've got like 200 destinations I could send it to. And this is detailed data that tells me, okay, what just happened? This event happened. This is what I did. This is all the data captured. This is the actual content. This was me probably a minute ago. And it captured the data. It captured the metadata. Shows me what changed at this step. So this can be very powerful for you if you want to track what's going on in different systems. It also provides an entire graph of what's happening along the way in each step. And all, like I said, all of this is data that you could tap into and use for your own purposes. This is really good for routing, figuring out if something missed. Okay, one device is wrong. I have unique IDs on every step. The one I like it for is I'm subscribing to a REST service. They charge me per megabyte downloaded. I have an exact record of when I got it, how big it was, with a unique hash mark. So they, we can tell, hey, you said you sent me, you know, 10 gigs at this time, but I can tell you, well, this is how much I received, this is how long it took, this is what time it was, and we got an audit record to say what happened. So that becomes very helpful for that as well. And the other thing, which is really great for me and when I'm doing any kind of testing, is I can go back to recent data provenance and say, okay, I don't want to reload that. For some of these, I could just hit replay depending on when I ran it and run it again. So you don't have to rerun or reconnect to external systems to get data for testing, which I think is very helpful. Like right here, I want to do a replay that data. Now it just runs through the system again with that exact data. So if you want to do unit testing, integration testing, it's very easy to do that. For people who don't like UIs, this UI is a very slim UI. Every call we make is a REST call. The entire system is based on REST, so everything I do from moving a box, adding a processor, anything we do here, any of those procedures in there, that's a REST API. So you could script everything with a REST API. There's also a Python wrapper to that, which is very powerful, that you can build these flows up and move them between servers completely with scripting it with Python. I'm going to stop that one. Yeah, so the initial problem we had was there was no version control, which anyone in enterprise knows you better have some version control. So they added version control now, so you could save your versions. It shows up in Apache NiFi registry, which stores all these changes. What's nice now is we back that up with GitHub. So when you store each file, we keep a change here in GitHub. So this just got updated automatically. See, 18 seconds ago, I put a new update. Yeah, there's 21 seconds. It just changed this one. So we have all that data there. Okay, so what about the deep learning part? Oh, there's my face. So the deep learning part is very, very simple. What's nice about MXNet is it has a very rich library. It has a very rich set of pre-built examples, pre-built models you can use. If we look at the example, I'm calling this one here. This is very simple code to use. It basically comes down to I load a model, and that's a pre-built model in the zoo. I don't have to specify anything else. I don't have to say how to download it. Specify the model name in there. Say it's pre-trained, otherwise I could retrain it with my own set of data, but I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to load that file that I just captured. I just captured an image. Send it here. It pulls it out. I format a JSON string, print it out. NiFi captures that string. I have it and I have that image. NiFi processes both the image and this JSON data about it. If you look here, what the content is pretty straightforward. And we're pushing that, I'm pushing that to a server to store it. Because I, for some reason, my company won't let me directly save to Hadoop from my laptop. Don't know why. So I have to push it to a cluster. And the cluster, I'm doing some simple routing. And at the end, I push it to a table. And that data that I loaded just became a Hive table. So that's all tabular data. There's the image. There's the classification, percentages. What host it came from, again, important in a distributed process, especially in IoT where I might have 10,000 devices, to know which one this was, you know, when it happened. All those things are nice. Obviously, I don't have to put all that in a table. I could have multiple tables. I could push that to Hive. I could push that to HBase. It really depends on what you want to do. I can push it to Druid. I can push it to all of them at once. And if I decide, if someone comes up with a new thing or someone says, you got to put it in Mongo, I could drop it in Mongo. There's no limit to what I can do on that part. It's pretty straightforward. Probably should show a couple slides. So this is basically the what I'm doing. For some of these, I have devices. From here, I'm also running locally. This could be from 100 machines, 1,000. Doesn't really matter. You just got to scale it out. It uses Apache Zookeeper for consensus. So it's pretty simple. We grab sensors, pictures, various instrumentation from the device. It gets sent over SSL from that device to a NiFi gateway, such as my laptop, or it could go right to the cloud, depending on, you know, what kind of telecommunication connection you have. And then from there, I push it to servers. I do some event processing in NiFi, like we showed you with Tika. Tika can extract content from files, which is great. So I can just pull it out of PDFs. So if your data is a PDF, Word document, Excel, I can pull that text out, run some natural language processing. And then I could do, if you have more advanced deep learning workloads, like I said, you can run some classification even on the small device, on a laptop, on a server. But if you really have complex jobs or if you're retraining them, you might want to run them on those expensive GPU machines, whether it's in the cloud or on premise at your own facility. NiFi can call those either if they're Dockerized directly through Yarn, or it could call it through using Apache Libby to Apache Spark and have Spark MXNet connector run those. And that could be Dockerized workload or not. In the new Hadoop 3.1, we now have the ability to run Docker on top of a pure Apache platform, which is pretty great. I know everyone loves Kubernetes, but you don't need that to run Dockerized deep learning workloads. So we could distribute this along the way. There's some other Apache projects in there, of course. Atlas, Nox, and Baryon Ranger for security and administration. Again, that depends on what you need to do. Obviously, in my lab on my laptop, I don't need to have all that security. Though, you know, someone in this room might be hacking me right now, so maybe I should have that on. So on the server, this is pretty much what we'll have set up. We'll have a bunch of different nodes. Very few people will have all GPU nodes in a cluster. It'd be awesome if you could. You'd have to have a lot of money, and then why are you using open source? Well, because it's the smart solution either way. But you're probably going to have a mix of GPU and CPU nodes. What's nice in the new version of Hadoop 3.1, Yarn is able to specify GPU clusters. So you can create a queue in Yarn to say, these are my GPU nodes. Put them together, set up a workload just to go there. Now, if you have a large Hadoop cluster, training on a lot of CPUs is pretty effective. But I mean, training on one massive NVIDIA GPU may be better. So you could figure out that balance yourself, or not let regular Hadoop jobs run on the GPU cluster. You got options there. You can run these workloads directly, or you can run them Dockerized. Obviously, the advantage of Docker is you can have all the versions you want, everything specified exactly, which also includes maybe versions of Spark that your Hadoop cluster doesn't support yet, or really old ones that you don't really want anyone to support. You could just run that within a Dockerized job. It goes away. It's isolated from everyone else. Very simple. This is a pretty standard Hadoop 3.1 setup. You could download this all. Obviously, Hortonworks has an open source HTTP version of this. It's all Apache software you could download and install a little bit easier than trying to install everything yourself, because there's a lot of working parts here. But either way, you know, completely open source. What's nice is that I'll show you some of the components that we just did and what NiFi piece is for. The NiFi piece is for collecting the data. You know, that's get all the sensors, call the scripts, get all the images, get them together and send them securely to the next spot. From there, what do we want to do with that? This is where your decision making happens. And this is where I left out one project, and Julian's going to be mad at me. Apache Calcite is in here, so I can make SQL on top of these flows. So as data comes in, I can run a SQL query on it, whether it's data from a device, data from a file, data from a PDF, do a query on it to decide, okay, this data hasn't changed, let's ignore this data, or let's send this data to a file system versus somewhere else. And we could store it to all the, pretty much all the Apache data stores, and we could put it into Slack, email, all these fun places you want to send it. Kafka, obviously, is a very good place to put this data, because if I push it into Kafka, then on the other side, I can read it with Flink or Apache Spark Streaming. So you've got a cut or storm. There's a lot of people who could do that next level of processing that you might want to do in Scala or Java or Python and not do it all with this GUI framework. That's debatable what you need to do there. This part's pretty important is let's integrate all the different projects to do other things. Sentiment analysis is a good one to do while something's in a stream. You know, transform the data. The data came in as JSON. I do not, if you were in Owen's talk yesterday, you don't want to use JSON as your main format for querying data. It's big, it's slow. So what we can do with NiFi is take that JSON data and automatically convert that using a schema into Apache ORC files. Or I could put it into Parquet, or I could put it into Avro. A lot of different formats. I could aggregate it so I don't have to push. All these little devices are sending small JSON. I don't want to create a million files in Yarn. That's not great for HDFS to have that. So I can merge them together into bigger chunks. Maybe wait till I get a 64 meg chunk of a file, then store it. I could enrich it adding weather and location. If you saw on NiFi, I could just keep adding attributes to that data and not change that data as it comes in. And I could keep a checksum on that so we know that data hasn't changed if you have auditing purposes. But I can add metadata to it. And that metadata could be things like the results of sentiment analysis, the results of deep learning, you know, weather, location data, anything I have to enrich that. I could look up IP address and match that to location. All those things can happen while the data's in stream before we do anything with it. And then, why do I like NiFi? These are some features that are very important for any workload. Deep learning workload's a little more important, I think, because of potential cost you have of getting that data to begin with. So it's very important for you not to lose data, to be able to queue things up, to have back pressure in case something slows down. The data provenance, like we saw, so we know if something changed, something got lost, all pretty important. Again, I got to change that 60 sources to 300. I didn't update this slide. All of these are very useful when you're doing something that's complex. Minify is the smaller one, does the same thing, but drops off the UI, makes it a little more compact so it can run on different devices. I can run all the way down to an Arduino. I usually run on like a Raspberry Pi size device. That works pretty well. The deep learning part, before I had to do TensorFlow, which is okay. It's Apache licensed, but it's owned by one vendor. I mean, there's some other community there, but we have an Apache deep learning library that's as rich and as full as TensorFlow. There's no reason why not to use MXNet. From the performance things we've seen, it's usually faster. I mean, they started a little later, so they have a little bit advantage there. It's also, if anyone's done any machine learning at Kaggle, you'll know XJ Boost, because that wins every competition. Well, this is the same team. So you gotta imagine, they know what they're doing. What's cool is, it's really simple to use. They have a very clean interface. On top of it, they have something called Gluon, which is a very clean interface, sort of like Keras, that lets you write these deep learning workflows in Python, and it's not really complex. I mean, sure, there's a lot of math. It's very easy to distribute on Yarn and Spark, and I can run it. I've run it on all kinds of crazy devices, and the model zoo is pretty rich. So if you want to do something like single shot detection, YOLO, those are already built just like TensorFlow. What else is great? There's great documentation. Obviously, Apache Projects, so it's open for everyone to help out. They've got one specific for computer vision and one for NLP, and they're adding more examples there. They support Keras now. So if you're doing TensorFlow plus Keras, you could just change your back end and use that same Keras code, and now you're running on Apache MXNet and not on TensorFlow. And you could debate it yourself, but obviously we know the advantages of being an Apache project. The Python interface is great. They also have a model server. If you don't know what that is a REST server that interfaces with these models. That makes it very handy for you to call this from any web service, NiFi, anything you want, push an image over that REST API and get your results back as JSON. A lot of vendors sell these at very expensive. This is completely open source. It's very nice and works with any of the models that you have out there, including your own. So that's really good to look at. It runs TensorBoard, so if you're doing TensorFlow now and you want to be able to see how your things are running, you could do that through MXNet as well. There's also, if it wasn't open enough, it supports Onyx, which is supported by Microsoft, Amazon, a lot of deep learning players that let you transfer your pre-trained model between places. Hopefully at some point that'll be everyone, so you'll never have to worry, okay, if I put all my eggs in the MXNet basket, now I can't use TensorFlow. With this format, I save it as Onyx, and then I can push it to everyone else, whether it's PyTorch, you know, somebody's internal format, so you could keep open source but share your models. So that's very important. And again, it's just a pip install, pretty simple. I've got articles on all the different ways that I can connect between NiFi and MXNet. You saw the simple one, which is just calling a Python script. Pretty straightforward. I also run this on devices. I was afraid it wouldn't make it through custom, so I didn't bring all my crazy-looking devices. The model server we mentioned, REST API, pretty much integrate that with anything. I can run it inside Apache Zeppelin notebooks. If you haven't seen Zeppelin, it's pretty awesome. I know Jupyter's great, but Zeppelin's Apache. And it's very easy to run these things. Runs inside Embari, sets it up. Very nice interface to Spark, works really well. It could use a little more on the charting and graphing, but it's got basics there. I can run it on Yarn 3.1, Dockerized containers. I can run it on Yarn through MXNet has its own runner. I'll show you a couple different ways to do that. MXNet has, if these names don't look familiar to you, if you look at TensorFlow or any of the other AI deep learning ones, these are very common papers that people have implemented. And these are pretty much the ones you're going to use to look at images. All of these are available pre-built in MXNet. You don't have to write these or implement them yourselves. You could download that library and run it on a constrained device. So you don't need a GPU or something complex to be able to use these to classify a picture, which is what most people are going to do. I've got instructions on how to do it on a Raspberry Pi, very simple. You get back your results. I like to format everything as JSON because it's very easy to route to different people. And then it's very trivial in NiFi for me to grab this data and parse it with a schema and turn that into a table. And I can query that live. Very simple to do. Gluon is an advanced interface. Like I said, it makes it simpler. Not that it was that hard before. Again, I've got detailed articles and the code there for you to do it. This one I just did last week. It's a new release of Gluon. This makes it even simpler. That's that line I showed you on the command line. To do two lines, did that for me. It grabbed, I took an image, it analyzed the image. It only has 12 things it's been trained for, which is a weird list of things. TV monitor, bottle, person, cat. I guess just a couple of common things. Obviously, in your use case, you're going to want to get your own pictures, unless you happen to have a place that just has bottles, TVs, people, and cats, which for me is actually the perfect data set, so I did not complain. This is how hard it is to install it. That's with all the extra steps. So you take this slide and you can install it on your Mac if you got a Mac. Windows, pretty much the same thing. I can also run this directly on a NiFi node. So if I want to run this on a Unix server so that I don't have to worry about other devices, it's very easy to install MXNet and all the related things on there so I can run it directly. Again, CentOS is a little bit more work to get all the libraries you might need to run it, but not too hard. Same with various edge devices. I was talking about Zeppelin. We at least got maps. So, I mean, you could show maps as data comes in, pop it on a map. That's an open street map. Again, more sensors. I can run the code directly in Zeppelin. So if you're learning how to do deep learning, you could practice in there, get your results back. It's a very good way to train, especially if you have a Zeppelin environment available. You don't have to install anything on your desktop, and it gives you the full ability to explore the deep learning libraries. Again, setting that up is pretty straightforward as well. The one thing I'll point out is this thing I'm putting there is this is the pre-trained model. If you're not using Gluon, you have to download it manually and put it somewhere. So if you use that new Gluon model, you don't have to worry about that. So you get rid of that whole extra step of downloading a model. Gluon will do it for you and keep it local. Again, another thing, there's a runner with MXNet that lets you run these jobs on Yarn, as specialized jobs. And I thought that was really cool until we came out with Hadoop 3. And then I could just do it like this. It's built in. I don't have to do anything to run a MXNet job. This is all I need to do to be able to run one on a Hadoop 3.1 node. As you can see, and built into this, I don't have it listed on there, but I can enable, if I had a GPU, and say this job runs on a GPU or how many, and it'll distribute it in Yarn. Obviously, you could set up special Yarn queues to run it based on, you know, how many GPUs you have, how many resources it might need. This is just a classification, so this runs pretty fast and small. If you were using this for training your model, then you might want to really take advantage of the Hadoop cluster and have 10, 20, 1,000 nodes running something. So if something used to take you a day or 2 days on a workstation, you spread that out on a Hadoop cluster and you could do these training in minutes. You know, we have people using a 100 node Hadoop cluster. The training on a work thing took them 7 days, takes them 7 minutes now. So if you can train the models in 7 minutes or less, once you start doing this, you could have your models learn as data's coming in within a 15-minute cycle. New data comes in, they learn new things. I've got a company I'm working with, they're looking at solar panels and looking to see where there's hot zones and cold zones to know when the panels are going to fail. And they could do that automatically using deep learning. Right now they're using TensorFlow. I'm trying to move them over to MXNet. But again, you get full monitoring of all that, which, you know, all that fun Yarn. You don't need Spark. I didn't need Docker. That was the script. That's all you need to do. I picked up a regular Python MXNet script, dropped it in a directory. Or I could drop it in HDFS if you want this completely distributed. Input, output, everything in HDFS. So you have a distributed file system. There's a new project, which I think Wang is going to talk about that later today, so I don't want to steal his magic. But it's pretty awesome. It makes it even easier. And this one has a cool logo, too. I don't know if that'll be the permanent logo, but that's a sneak preview of later, how easy it is to run that. Obviously, he's probably going to show TensorFlow because that's most people ask for that. Model server. Again, that's how hard it is to run a model on a model server. So it's not that advanced. If you had the model locally or on your own network, it could download it. If it's already downloaded, it won't download it again unless you change it. Again, if it's one that's already in the system, you just have to put a port, it returns back JSON. Pretty easy way to integrate deep learning into anything. Again, I mentioned before Apache OpenNLP, which is a really awesome project. It lets you do a lot of things. One of them for me, which is cool, is entity resolution. What that means is it has a known set of things that it could figure out for you. One that's nice is location. So you send it in a document or a line of text, and in it, it has Montreal. Well, it'll pull that out and say, okay, this is a location. So if you're trying to analyze documents, you could get locations, name, currency. It has a lot of models trained on important entities like that, and that can be very useful if you're trying to look at a document as it comes in. Remember, we could parse that PDF, pull out that data, look at it, and decide, okay, this is this location, let me send this to somewhere else. Tika, again, pull out text, which is pretty awesome. And, you know, there was how cool the Apache community is. I just mentioned this article using Tika and OpenNLP, and I had a committer look at my example code and check it out and said it was cool. And then let me know the new version's coming out, and I updated that. And that happened all online. It was very cool. We got a couple minutes left. I don't know if there's any specific areas of code you want to look at. Like I said, we have the deep learning runs running. This one's the one with NLP, which I mentioned before, pulling some of the things out. I also have Stanford Core NLP for sentiment analysis. That one's pretty good. Unfortunately, the licensing on there is not Apache, so I won't start that one. If anyone has any questions, we have a couple minutes left. We want to go through that. Otherwise, I'll just go through things until they pull me off the stage. Now, some of the data I'm pulling out here, like here, there was no dates in that one. See, I'm pulling out dates, locations, names, and organizations. It's not 100% foolproof, but it's pretty well trained, and they have models for different languages. I'm doing it for English because I know English kind of well. Oh, it found my name, which is cool that it knows my name. But so it'll pull things out of the document. So now I have that extra metadata that I can decide what I want to do with. I can do routing based on that. So if I see this document's from me, you know, maybe throw it away. You know, if it's from someone else, do something important with it. Whatever you're going to do, it's kind of cool there. So that's just one feature that you have, and that's just one step of the way. If you see, I've got a lot of them sitting there in the queue as it's being processed, and I'm pulling all this different data out. Tika lets me pull out a lot of metadata about files, which might be important. Like, this told me who is the PDF producer. You know, what was the title internally? Was it encrypted? Who made it? All this data might be important if you have a bunch of files that you found. Say you have an old email archive and you're trying to process files, especially with new laws around retaining files forever. You might want to know who touched it, when they touched it, when it came from. All these sort of things are important. And you could do that automatically with all Apache projects, which is pretty cool. And this flow right here takes a list of documents. And what's nice, I push it to my custom processor on top of Tika, and I could either output text or HTML. And from there, what's nice with Tika, it uses a bunch of other Apache projects to parse any Microsoft format, PDF, HTML, XML. The amount of formats that it can process is amazing, and it's just automatic. Yes? Slides are shared, GitHub for everything, how to do everything, every example, the source code from the screen, stickers, everything's shared and free. I posted one link already, but it'll go in the official slides as well, and I'll make sure that's tweeted out so people see that. Any other questions? Yes. Yes. I spoke with someone in Berlin about that. That is a great idea. I think those two together would work great.
And is there any difference between a connector for NiFi and MiniFi? Because I see MiniFi a real big thing, maybe?
MiniFi, what's nice is I could take any NiFi processor, and it's in a NAR file, which is just a jar with a different name for some reason, and drop it in the MiniFi lib directory, and now it's available there. So, yeah, you can put them anywhere, as long as within the constraints of MiniFi has no UI and probably has less RAM, but, you know, and it's anyone you write, and the code is just very simple Java. And there's a Maven archetype that builds you everything you need. You put your code right in the middle. So if you have a class now that does X, or it's in a lib directory already, point to that in Maven, add a line to call it. It gives you access to all these attributes and the flow file, and you can process any of that as input and output whatever you want. So your class sits in the middle. You just do whatever you do, whether it's proprietary or open source, and at the other end, it comes out just like it was from one of the built-in ones. And you get all the advantage of the queues between there, the data provenance, the ability to start, stop, distribute it, run everything in a cluster. If we look on the clustered version, when I look on anything, we have where it can run. See, I can run it on all nodes in a cluster, which could be the biggest cluster I've seen is 2,000, or it can run on one node, like a primary node, because sometimes you might not want something distributed. There's sometimes when we're pulling out of Kafka, we might want just one master and then manually push it out to other things. There's advanced stuff there. Yes. Yes. We have, there's some clients in Europe using NiFi plus Apache Atlas for that now. Because there's an Atlas connector, so all that data provenance gets pushed to Atlas, and Atlas grabs that provenance from Hive, Spark, HBase. So as the data comes through the system, we have the full lineage of it, so you know who touched it, when, where, everywhere, and you can apply security to mask or remove that data in process at every step from, if we do it with NiFi and MiniFi, I know the origin. So I have that data, the complete life cycle of the data till it reaches HDFS, so someone reads it in a Hive query. The whole step is there. Yeah, there's a lot of people using it for GDPR. 1 minute, 1 minute. Don't want to get in trouble. Anything in 1 minute? Going. Thank you for coming.